So after Barnhill, I was going to teach in Westfield and couldn't because of knee surgery, and I went to Bible school, and from there my direction changed slightly, and I took a summer pastorate in back of Sussex at Pudiac and Hillsville and Hammondville, three churches, and was a camp manager at the same time at Camp Tulacadick and counselor. And then they came and asked me to stay and teach school in Pudiac. They needed a teacher, and it was a one-room school, and I hadn't done that, but I had attended those, of course, and I taught for a year, and along kept the churches, so I had enough money so I could go to Gordon College for 3 years. Well, I mean, to start going, anyhow. And then I went to Gordon College and graduated from there. And during the summer of 66 and 67, I did youth corps work for convention and went to Bolivia to set up a work camp for a centennial project in 67. That was a nice experience, being in Bolivia for 3 weeks and visiting various areas. My first pastorate was in Port Bickerton, first full-time, Port Bickerton and Port Hillford and Sonora, and the east coast of Nova Scotia near Antigonish, fairly close, near Sherbrooke Village is there, the famous Sherbrooke Village in Nova Scotia. And was there for nearly 2 years, and then came to Acadia to work on my theology studies. And I was a student and I had a pastorate at the same time, which is a good idea and which isn't a good idea, because your loyalties are kind of divided. So I was at Scotch Village in West Gore, Disciples Church, Scotch Village, Newport Baptist, and Cogmagan for 4 years, and was married early on there in 69. And we had our two children there, and came to Black's Harbor in 72, from 73 to 76, and went back to Scotch Village, second time, and went back to university to do some more studies. Scotch Village from 76 to 82, and came to Rushagornish, and was in Rushagornish till 89, and then was in, finished at Rushagornish to do special care, to look after my mother-in-law, and do special care, and we lived in Charter Settlement, and then I preached part-time as well, and then moved to Blissville, separated from my wife in that year, moved to Blissville and had the Baptist Church in Blissville, Center Blissville, down near Hoyt, for a couple of years or so, and then came to Kingsley, another church, Kingsley United Church. They were looking for someone, and I said, sure, why not? So did that church for 2 or 3 years, and they have done senior care since, and with several different people in different places, and supply church work since. Most recently, I guess, doing full-time supply in Southampton near Nackwick until midwinter, and then my duties as senior care has kind of taken over my time. So I still supply and some, and do a lot of music. Right. Some of these are interesting. I never even noticed those. I flew past those.
If there's anything that you would have done different in the past history that you just told us, as far as careers or anything, was there anything you would have done different?
No, I don't think so. Although, as one gets older, one knows that there were several things that they could have done and probably have been successful at. Maybe I've always been very happy with, I never considered church work sort of work. I always enjoyed it so much that I never thought of it as work. And teaching the same, I never considered it really, like work is, you think of work as being something that's laborious and toilsome and difficult maybe, but not so with the ministry. Hours, of course, 24 hours a day and all sorts of hats to wear, but I never thought of it as being strenuous or stressful. I always enjoyed it. And but there are other things that I enjoy along with that, like the gardening thing. I could have, I suppose, enjoyed horticulture work very much, although that wasn't my calling.
Right.
You know, but, and the senior care thing I love. I think I could have enjoyed that sort of work, but it wasn't my calling, I guess, and put it that way. So to have done anything differently, no, I guess I wouldn't have in terms of vocation, no.
And you had briefly mentioned that your children, could you perhaps offer their names and where they are now?
Okay, Melanie is Melanie lives in Lincoln. She's married to Chris Moore. They have three children. Samantha will be 12 in October. And the twin boys, Jason and Bradley, are 10. They were 10 in April. So there's 17 months between those kids. So they were close in age and quite a interesting young family. And Chris, Melanie's husband, is a carpenter, and Melanie works for Covey's in their office, Covey's business. And Trevor and his wife have gone through university. Trevor has his degree in business administration or business, and is working on his master's type work to be accredited in. To have a chartered sort of thing in finance. Mm-hmm. And Tina, his wife, Tina Oates from Moncton, Riverview, she has her degree in psychology and her master's in psychology and her doctorate in psychology, and is doing her residency starting in September this year in Halifax. And Trevor, they've just moved there in August of this year, 2000, and he's looking for a job there in his field of financial consultant analysis, actually, investment analysis. So he's not too concerned about a job, it seems. He thinks he'll find one.
Sounds over.
But he left a good one here, and he has to travel. Has to travel along till they get there. Vocations all lined up.
Right. What would be the most important lesson you hope your children learn from you?
I think one that I probably learned from my parents, and there's a couple, but it probably has to do with the spiritual, is to take time for God and all that that means. And also to, I haven't always probably, but do as I do and not as I say, but learn to live one day, learn to live one day at a time. Sort of not to be over anxious, and I picked that up from my parents early on, and to realize that you can sort of live one day at a time without letting a lot of stress and everything else overtake you, and thereby have some sort of a degree of an ongoing degree of peace in your life, regardless of what's happening. You know, circumstances, peace is inward, and out the world could fall down around a person. And I guess that's what I meant when I said with my mother, I didn't say the world could fall down around you, but the world could be practically in shambles all around you, but you can go through it walk through it with a degree of poise and peace and serenity and calmness without, like everybody says, oh, I got to have a breakdown, you know. I got to have some stress. I got to take time out for a breakdown. You don't have to. You know, you can experience peace in the midst of any storm. And I hope that that's one of the things that I have been able to sort of just pass on without stressing it at all, just to see it in lifestyle. And I think I've passed on the love with both my kids, the love for gardening, and whatever that means, the serenity that comes out of that. They both enjoy that.
Good.
Very much. And the music thing too, with my daughter perhaps more than my son, although he's a good, he's a trained pianist up to a certain point. He took lessons and he likes piano and is a good pianist. And my daughter's more natural. She likes music too. Mm. And the grandchildren are musical. They're singing and they like music.
Yes, sir. And they know where it comes from now.
Well, somewhere along the way, yeah. And both sides, my wife was musical as well, so they get it from both sides.
Now we're going to jump ahead, we're probably going to jump back, and we're going to go back to 1952-53.
Okay, that sounds good.
What do you remember, this is a very broad and general question, mind you, of the expropriation in 52-53?
I can remember... I was with my parents the night we went. Parents didn't get babysitters in those days. And we traveled with our parents, whether it be to church or to funerals or meetings. And the public meeting that was held at the hall, Community Hall in New Jerusalem, when they made the announcement that the land would be expropriated in the name of the Queen for an army camp, army base. I was at that meeting, so I can remember that. And... I don't remember so much the talk or the feeling, but I can remember being at home after that and knowing that we were going to have to move. And the next part of that, the reality of moving, I guess, was traveling with my parents, going to various places where there were farms for sale. See, what you did, you went across the river, wherever, Sussex, Norton, Hampton, wherever, looking for farms, a replacement. Because they didn't find you a place to live, nor did they pay you enough to reestablish hardly. So, but you know, we looked for farms, and going with my parents on those, you know, you'd visit several places maybe in one day, if it happened to be on a Saturday, or when we weren't in school in the summer, traveling with them. So I remember that, and then I remember coming to Greenwich Hill. That was a temporary move, actually. Mom and Dad, see, 54 came, and it was springtime, and they still hadn't found a farm. There were some other people the same, but hadn't just found the place they thought was right. And there was a small place, a small farm, actually, not really a farm, hardly, but near my uncle and aunt at Greenwich Hill. The house was for sale, so we could use my uncle's barn and farm, and we bought that place temporarily till we found a farm. And... I guess it was all in the, you know, it was all things worked together for good. And we stayed there, and Dad had a bit of heart problem and was sick. So we got rid of the cows and the horses and stayed there, he was then, you see, he was six, we moved in 54. So he was 54. And had he bought a large farm in 10 years, he'd have been 64 and, you know, should have been winding down. So it worked out fine that way, but he didn't get a big farm. And then he worked when he worked at the golf course as greenskeeper outdoors and that sort of thing. So he enjoyed it. And he was working there when he died, actually, in 67. He was still working there.
I know, as you have mentioned earlier, that you were probably too young to appreciate the exact emotions of the time. Were you made aware of them later?
I suppose. Yes. Well, you sense them later. You right. Still sense, because people still have. And the one thing I do remember about the leaving, we had moved everything by truck, of course, to Greenwich Hill, and the last thing to go would have been the last truckload left, and I suppose my mother and my brother Franklin was helping us move, or Floyd. But Dad and I took our team of horses and our farm wagon, and we drove the team of horses and farm wagon from Jerusalem to Greenwich Hill, and I traveled with Dad. So my thing of leaving, I suppose, I can't remember how my father was. See, I was young, so I don't just remember, but I think if it had been myself, I'd have been pretty broken up. You know, leaving, driving out the driveway and going, and so the house he'd built and the farm he'd had and the family farm. So But I don't remember that. For me, it was going with the horse and wagon, this nearly an all-day thing, driving them out to Greenwich Hill, over the over through Helmonton's Mountain, down around, out through Brown's Flat, and down the back way to Greenwich Hill. So that was kind of the actual moving thing. The tanks came in. I remember going a few days before we moved down to an area where the tanks were parked in a field on a Sunday, probably, or a Saturday, I don't remember, and going through the tanks, looking at the tanks and that. They were all lined up there and some soldiers around. So that was, in a child's mind, that was probably more exciting. I wasn't old enough, I don't think, to probably catch the sadness of the whole thing. But you sure did as I got older, and you know, the feeling that was, and it's still there when you go to, it seems like all people hardly need an excuse to get together, the Jerusalem people, you know, be it a picnic or a funeral or an anniversary or whatever, some sort of a celebration, they always come, and there's that thing, that bond, it's there. So, sure there was a lot of emotion, and there's a lot of people didn't want to move, and you know, now today, I guess in retrospect, had that happened today, it probably couldn't have happened because people wouldn't have let it. They'd have just said, no, we're not.
Yeah. And your father, from what you and your brother have told me about him, was probably, if he was feeling any angst inside, was not the type of man who would have rebelled or said anything out loud.
No, quite royalist. And, you know, this was done in, quote unquote, in the name of the Queen.
Right.
Not that she knew it was being done.
Yeah.
It was done in the name of the Queen, and no, my parents would not, no.
Continued on with that dignity, grace, and poise, and just...
It would have taken it would have taken some sort of a movement, I think, for the general, if everybody had gotten together and said, no, you know, we're not going to do this, but there was enough, just a feeling it was going to be done, the government was doing it, and that was it. There was no recourse.
So finally, after the temporary stop, your family finally rested in Welsford, was it?
Greenwich Hill, near Brown's Flat.
Okay.
Just below Brown's Flat.
Okay, but your father worked in...
Westfield.
In Westfield, right?
Yeah, at the golf course, yes, in Westfield. Yeah. Not Welsford, but Westfield.
Right.
The one there in Westfield.
Right. Have you been back to your... To New Jerusalem?
Hmm. As often as I can get there, which, you know, when it's open, whenever there's opportunity. I've helped with Remembrance Day service there with the Padre, helped in terms of being a minister, helped leading the service at Remembrance Day.
Right.
And gone back and helped with music when they get together in July the 1st there for the picnic. And gone back as much as I've had time for.
I don't mean to lead you into generalizing in any way, shape, or form any more than I probably already have, but do you think your family's better off from the move?
That's like a what-if question. There's no way really to answer that. I often thought if we had still been living there, I might have, being the youngest son, my oldest brother would have been away doing agriculture work. My second brother was really a trucker by nature and by desire and by vocation. I might have ended up on the family farm as a farmer. I don't know. It's one of those what-ifs. You never know. And, of course, the whole scene would have changed, like other farming areas. There would have been... The older people would have passed on inevitably, as they have, and a lot of farms would have been either vacant probably or become, sons would have moved away like they have from other farming areas, and a lot of farms would have been conglomerates, I imagine, bought up by perhaps some one farm that had been probably three or four farms together to make it viable. Farming is not too viable.
Right.
Then it was. It's a different age. You could get by with, you know, your gardens and your cream and your animals and stuff. It's different today. You'd have to work at something else to probably afford to live that sort of a lifestyle, I think, today.
Reverend Johnson, I'm going to give you this opportunity to perhaps add anything, or if I've jogged your memory on anything that you'd like to add or conclude.
No, I don't think I've I've rambled on long enough, probably. I don't think it's, you know, I can't think of anything else.
Okay.
Much I've touched on some things anyhow.
On that note, I'd like to thank you very much for that most delightful and insightful conversation.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for coming and doing the interview. It's been a good experience.
Great. I enjoyed your story. Thanks again.
Thank you.